Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We've been talking a lot this morning about the fallout and the consequences of the violence over the weekend in Arizona. Certainly the condition of the defendant, the shooter, who's in the custody of federal authorities, and also the condition of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, who's got a bullet wound to her brain, is in critical but supposedly stable condition as far as we know. We're going to leave her prognosis and her medical details aside for just a moment and note that there is a whole community of people in intensive care right now with bullet wounds to the brain, and a larger community who have survived their injury and have gone on to live certain kinds of lives in an environment which maybe is really, really good at trauma care, but not so good at rehabilitative care. And we're going to discuss the consequences of traumatic brain injury in this very medically miraculous time with Dr. Ross Bullock, University of Miami's chief of neurotrauma at Jackson Memorial Hospital. He joins us from Miami. Dr. Bullock, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, good morning. It's a real pleasure for me.
How many patients, bullet wounds to the brain, do you have right now?
Actually about three, unfortunately. And, I guess that we operate on about 50 a year, and there are about something in the region of 150 admitted per year just to our hospital. And many of the big cities in North America, of course, are having the same kinds of numbers.
There are really three acts to this story, and I hope we can get to all three. Act one is the extraordinary advances that have been made at the time of injury to both decompress the brain and to sort of turn the brain down to a low ebb to minimize damage. What have we developed? And the war is part of this in Afghanistan and Iraq, but some of these paramedic strategies and trauma care strategies have been with us for decades.
Yeah, yes, sir. You know, we have no magic drug. We have no single medication that can mitigate the effects of this type of devastating injury, be it closed injury or be it a penetrating injury like with a bullet. But what we do have is much better organizational systems. And as you mentioned, the military really led the way in setting up these types of systems. Better ICU care has improved the situation. And I guess one thing that's worth mentioning is the advent of decompressive craniotomy. I mean, this operation that fell out of favor for many years has now come back, and we think that it's the combination of early decompression along with better ICU care that in some selected cases can result in better outcome.
Craniotomy so means really remove that skull, reduce the pressure, which prevents the axons, the neurons, from actually breaking under pressure if there is a closed head injury. That's sort of act one. Is that what you're saying?
Well, more or less, actually. But the neurons die just because of pressure. It's not so much the axons. So, but yes, that's broadly the idea, is to do that. And you know, we have medical ways to control that pressure, about four or five relatively effective medical ways. But when they fail, previously, it was death. Now, you know, we tend more towards using, I mean, this is not really a new thing. It's been around about 15, 20 years, but its use in the modern context is what seems to have made a big change.
Dr. Bullock, one of the things that fascinates me about the advances in the treatment of a traumatic brain injury is that one of the things surgeons have learned to do is to the brain has some amazing regenerative capacities, and therefore one of the things they do by removing the skull to prevent swelling damage, by putting patients into a medically induced coma, what the doctors are really trying to do is allow the brain to treat itself.
Oh, that is so true. That's absolutely right. And, you know, it would be really arrogant for anybody in medicine to think that we can treat anything as complex as brain regeneration and repair. And so what we're really doing is we're giving the patient an opportunity at life. We're giving them a chance to live, and then we're just standing back and letting natural repair regeneration processes do what they do. And we don't really fully understand those. We know that in animals, they're dramatic, and we've been able to show in rats that there is, you know, axonal return, that even new neurons grow in there. But in humans, these processes are much slower. And the real challenge for the next generation will be to try to learn how to unlock these types of regenerational and repair processes. We know that physical therapy probably stimulates those processes, probably brings back more of these new neurons that right now perhaps account for, you know, maybe 2 or 3, 4%
sure.
of the cells in the brain.
Well, and that's the extraordinary act two here, this ability to understand the regenerative powers imperfectly, though we do, of the brain and to step out of the way and allow the brain to heal itself. But act three is maybe more of a cautionary tale and doesn't necessarily have a happy ending in the sense that people with brain injuries who get their skulls put back on, who then have to go out into some sort of rehabilitative regime, discover that there are real limitations and weaknesses in the healthcare system to provide the kind of open-ended rehab that's really required for good outcomes in traumatic brain injury. How frustrating is that for you?
It is one of our major frustrations. Every day we find that, you know, our primary care facilities in big cities all over the country are choked up by patients that don't meet complicated criteria for rehab entry. And that's sometimes financially driven. Sometimes it's because the patients just don't have good enough functional capacity. They're not doing enough. They're not working enough with the therapist. Maybe they're old, maybe they're so badly disabled that they can't get to the criteria the therapists need. So that for those people that are in that kind of twilight zone between making the cut for rehab and leaving the acute hospital, there's really just no good alternative right now throughout the country.
And with all of the obsession with measuring outcomes and creating measurable outcomes with TBI, every case is different. What do you think the legacy of Gabrielle Giffords, if she recovers, is likely to be in a best-case scenario for you, doctor, before we go?
I think, although I can't comment too much on her, but I think her outcome is likely to be just great. She's obeying commands. She's had the best of care. And I think everybody's tremendously optimistic about her. And she may do, you know, as much for us as some of the other sentinel cases like Bob Woodruff and
right,
others.
Right, of ABC News, sure. Dr. Rasa Bullock, University of Miami's Chief of Neurotrauma at Jackson Memorial Hospital, dreaming of a recovery for Gabrielle Giffords and possibly her role as an advocate for people with TBI. Thanks, doctor.